All right, Proverbs 6 and verse 9. This will be the last one we'll cover tonight. So Solomon here is still talking about the sluggard, but he kind of switches gears and he goes into a different line of reasoning. Proverbs 6 and verse 9. It says, "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep?" So he's continuing his condemnation of the lazy man, but with a different line of argumentation here in these next three verses. He goes on to say, "Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man." So he begins here with a rhetorical question, "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard?" And I like these rhetorical questions in the Bible. You remember Pastor Mott did that study on the Socratic method back in Minneapolis a while back. But how many times God uses questions in the Bible? Right in the beginning, in the Garden of Eden. You know, "Who told thee thou wast naked? What hast thou done?" Right? You know, different questions. And, you know, really penetrating questions that really get to the heart of something. So when Solomon says, "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard?" he's not looking for an answer. Like the sluggard rolls up out of bed and says, "Oh, 12 hours? 14 hours?" Right? He's not actually looking for an answer. He's giving him a rebuke in the form of a question with hopes that it'll make the lazy bum think. And this is what we do when we ask our spouse or our children, "How long are you going to sleep?" Right? Are you going to sleep all day? Now, if a question won't get your kids out of bed, a rod across their butts will. So if you go to your teenagers and you say, "How long are you going to sleep?" and they just roll over, go get yourself a half-inch dowel rod, pull that cover back, and give them a good one right across the butt, and I guarantee you they're going to be up in breakneck speed. That will take care of that lazy streak right away. There was a movie, I think it was called, what was it called? I forget what it was called now. The Amazing Gift or something like that. And long story short, this guy had to, in order to get this giant inheritance, he had to go and learn how to work and be a man, basically. And he ended up going to stay with this rancher down in Texas. And the guy told him that breakfast is 5 o'clock and they'll be out working by 5:30 or something. And he didn't get up. And the guy comes in and takes a cattle prod and zaps him right in the butt. And the dude jumps out of bed and like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I told you breakfast is at 5 o'clock. And so anyway, that got him up right away. But both God and men in Scripture often ask sinners how long they will continue to sin. And I'm just going to run through a whole bunch of examples. And I have them printed out here, so you don't have to turn to them. I'm just going to read them off. And this is just going to prove the point by sheer volume here. Exodus 10:3, "How long wilt thou refuse to humble thyself before me?" the Lord says. Exodus 16:28, "How long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws?" Numbers 14:11, "How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them?" Numbers 14:27, "How long will I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me?" Joshua 18:3, "How long are ye slack to go to possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers hath given you?" 1 Samuel 16:1, "How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel?" 1 Kings 18:21, this is what Elijah said to the people of Israel whenever he was having that showdown on Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal. He said, "How long halt ye between two opinions?" Psalm 4:2, "How long will ye turn my glory into shame? How long will ye love vanity and seek after leasing?" That's lying. Psalm 82:2, "How long will ye judge unjustly and accept the persons of the wicked?" Proverbs 1:22, "How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity, and the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge?" Jeremiah 4:14, "How long shall thy vain thoughts lodge within thee?" Jeremiah 23:26, "How long shall this be in the heart of the prophets that prophesy lies?" Jeremiah 31:22, "How long wilt thou go about, O thou backsliding daughter?" And then our Lord Jesus Christ's words in Matthew 17:17, "How long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you?" So one thing you should learn from these verses is that God is long-suffering with sinners, including with lazy sinners, as he continually asks them. They get numerous exhortations of how long before God finally has enough? And he's like, you know what? You're getting the cattle prod. Because I've been asking, how long are you going to keep sleeping for long enough here? Solomon also uses the emphatic O to try to get through to the slow belly. Remember, he says, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? Remember, O, when it's standing before a noun in the vocative relationship, which or relation, which is what this is, how long, O sluggard, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard, it means, when it's in other connections or without construction, expressing, according to intonation, various emotions as appeal, entreaty, surprise, pain, or lament. So in this case, it would be with emotions of appeal, entreaty, and lament. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? Entreating him, appealing to him, lamenting. Like, get up. What are you doing? Why are you still sleeping? So one is justified using emotion while exhorting a lazy man to get out of bed. Now, Christians should not be lazy. Christians should have the best work ethic of anyone out there. And you know, if Christians in general, in the culture, had the best work ethic of anybody else, it would be so easy for us Christians to get jobs, to get high-paying jobs, and to be treated well. Because anybody would know, oh, you're a Christian? Oh, I'll hire you right now. Because I know you people work really hard. You're diligent. You're going to show up on time. You're going to work, you know, at 100% the whole time you're here. If Christians worked like that, we would have it really, really good.
Except it wouldn't last very long because people would catch on to that and everybody would be Christians.
That's true. And then, but then they would have to somehow, yeah, they would have to determine, you know, who the real Christians are, which is...
They'd show their colors once they were working.
They would.
They got the job.
But then it would taint, oh, you're a Christian. You may or may not work hard.
Well, how about this? How about if Christians in a particular church, now our church is so small that nobody even knows who we are, but like, let's say you had a larger church and you had Christians in that church and this church was known, you hire a guy from this church and he is going to be the best, most diligent worker ever. People would be busting down the door to get in this church and I'd be shooing them off like a bunch of roaches, like get out of here and not letting them in if they were trying to get in here to make money, that is. But anyway, then it wouldn't be something where people would just say, oh, I'm a Christian. You'd have to say, are you a member of that church? If you're a member of that church, I'll hire you. If you're a member of the charismatic deal down the street, go somewhere else. Wouldn't that be something?
It's just like Amish. I mean, that's...
Right. It's, yeah, exactly.
You think about them, you think about good quality work.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, and hard work, good quality. Yep. You know, if you, at least where I'm from, if you hire an Amishman, chances are you're going to get good, hard work out of them. And they're known for that. Mennonites are the same way. And it should be that way with Christians. Christians are not to be slothful in business, but fervent in spirit. Romans 12 and verse 11. It says, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Now, business is not confined to the sense that we think of it today. Did I give you the wrong reference?
Okay.
Oh, you might have got the wrong outline. This, I added this section in later.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I added this in later. I got thinking about this would really fit in here.
Okay, I thought I got it right, but maybe I didn't.
That's okay. So business is not confined to the narrow sense that we use it today. Today, when you say business, you think about like a company, right? Somebody that owns some kind of a company or a shop or a restaurant or something. Business is the state of being busily engaged in anything. It's industry and diligence. And I remember I learned this from Pastor Mott. He said it numerous times in sermons. You want to distinguish the difference between business and busyness. Right? There's a big difference between business and busyness. Business is industry, diligence, working busily engaged in something that is profitable, right? Something that's worthwhile. Busyness, you can be busy watching YouTube. You can be busy, whatever, you know, going, you know, whatever, doing pleasurable things, right? You can be busy doing anything. But business is a different story. Business is whenever you are engaged in something that is profitable and useful. We're not supposed to be slothful in business. Now, slothful, when you're speaking of persons, means full of sloth, indisposed to exertion, inactive, indolent, lazy, or sluggish. And just, if you ever forget what slothful means, just think of the sloth, the animal, right? That all they do is just hang upside down all day long. They move at about a quarter of a mile an hour. What? They don't?
Nope. They're a lot more busy than we think they are.
Well, they certainly move slowly.
Yeah, they do move rather slowly. Yeah. But they only sleep about 9 hours a day, and they patrol their territory all of the rest of the time, and they work very hard at it.
Really?
Yes.
They patrol.
Something that
really?
They eat just causes them to think and move slow like that, but they're not as...
They're not slothful.
Well, I've watched them at the zoo. I mean, those things move at a quarter mile an hour.
Slowly. Yeah, they do. They do move
no, really.
Slowly, but they are busy working.
They take like a week to even take a dump because they're, I'm serious, 2 weeks. Their internal organs are even slothful.
It takes that long.
Yeah, even their internal organs are slothful.
It's what they eat.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Yes,
well,
it is.
Just because they move slow doesn't mean they're not being productive.
Well, they may be, but the point is they move very slowly. Would you hire one? I would not. Would you hire a sloth for a guard dog?
It depends on if the work was quality or not.
Would you hire a sloth for a guard dog?
No,
I would not hire a sloth for a guard dog. Everything would get by him. He moves at a quarter mile an hour, I'm telling you. They are vicious, though. They do have some claws. And
remember that movie wherein they were likened to DMV?
They're not vicious
right.
either. They're very cuddly and sweet.
Well, only if you get on their bad side, they're not. They were on this show, the 70 most dangerous animals in Asia or something, and I didn't know Bev had such an affinity for sloths.
They're cute, though. They are.
They're very gentle.
I don't know how they could help but be. They can't move fast enough to hurt you.
Oh, they have really sharp claws, though.
It's like in that animated movie.
Yes.
Whenever they go to the DMV and the sloths are running the DMV.
Yes.
If you haven't seen that, it's hilarious. Oh, it's really funny. All right, anyway, after that slothful debate, I'm going to get back to this. We're not supposed to be slothful in business, but fervent in spirit. Fervent is hot, burning, glowing, boiling. Of persons, their passions, dispositions, or actions, ardent, intensely earnest. So when we work, we should be as if we're on fire. Like if you were on fire, like if you were literally on fire, you'd be moving pretty quickly to get yourself off fire, right? And so we should be like that when we're working hard and not moving slowly. Because, you know, the slower you move, the less you get done. Unless you can move too fast. I mean, you can do sloppy work that way. But when you can move quickly, you should be moving quickly. Now, this, of course, would be age-dependent as well. When you get to be, and no joking aside, when you get to be in your 70s and 80s, you just can't work as fast as you did when you were in your 20s or 30s, obviously. So you just have to adjust your expectations as you get older and just realize that you just can't, you're not going to be able to do the amount of things and as fast as you used to be. And that there's nothing wrong with that. That's life. But whatever work we have to do should be done busily, with diligence, not lazily and sluggishly. Did you ever notice that work will pretty much take, and I'd say with rare exception, work will take the allotted time to get done. If you have 8 hours to get the ditch dug, you will be scooping out the last piece of dirt at 7 hours and 59 minutes. And if you had an hour to get the same ditch dug, you would be scooping it out at 59 minutes. Most people, you ever notice this? They will take the full amount of time that they have. If you know, kids in school, if the paper's due in 2 weeks from now, they start working on it on, you know, the Thursday before it's due on Friday, right? That's what most people do. Not everybody. But a lot of people are like that. They take the whole amount of time.
But I do my best work when it's on
time. Well, and some people are like that. That is true. And I don't. And I know I have a pastor friend, which none of you know him, but we are completely opposite. Because he, like for him, whatever he's thinking about this week is what he's going to preach on Sunday. And there's nothing wrong with this. We're just different. And so he doesn't think beyond Sunday. That's it. And for me, it's like, if I don't have, I don't know, 2 or 3 months worth of sermons in my file already ready to go, I'm like, man, I got to get working here. I'm getting nervous, right? I don't have, I don't know, what am I going to preach on in 3 months from now or whatever? And so I'm just totally different.
Never mind that stuff that's supposed to take 2 weeks takes 2 months.
That happens too, yes.
Good point.
And that might be why I end up with 2 or 3 months in the queue, because things take longer than I thought they would. But, so I'm different that way. But some people do well under pressure. I don't. I can't write a
paper when I have a week to go because my thoughts and things just don't come together. But if it's due on that day when I'm working on it, all the thoughts come together and I get an A on the paper.
Yeah. Well,
all well and good as long as nothing jettisons your plans that day.
Right, exactly.
Vomiting or somebody's... Or
yes, that's right.
It's true. But
I have really cheerful thoughts.
So Christians should do their work or whatever they do with all of their might. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. For there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. Now remember, Ecclesiastes is written to men under the sun. You'll notice you'll get that phrase in Ecclesiastes a lot, under the sun. There's nothing new, no new thing under the sun. And there's a couple of places here I could probably find you one if I looked here carefully. Oh, with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. Yes. And there's another one too. Where is it? I probably won't be able to find it now. But anyway, you'll notice that phrase in Ecclesiastes a lot, under the sun. And that will explain this verse and many other verses in Ecclesiastes, because there are verses in Ecclesiastes like this one here in verse 5. Ecclesiastes 9 in verse 5, for the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. And you're like, well, the dead not know anything? People that are dead, they're in heaven. You're saying they don't know anything? Solomon is looking at under the sun. Oh, here we go, verse 3. This is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart where they live, and after that they go to the dead. So, under the sun, earth, from an earthly perspective alone, from a bodily perspective, when you die, that's it. You die, your body goes to the grave. And you don't think about anything, you don't have any memory, that's it. Your life is over, from an earthly, bodily perspective. And whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave whither thou goest. So under the sun, once you die, you're not going to get any more work done. You're not going to be able to accomplish anything more. So work hard, do it with all thy might, because whenever you die, that's it under the sun. Of course, we have the afterlife. We have the new earth when we get new bodies, and we can continue doing work. But from an earthly perspective, that's it. So work as hard as you can while you can. Christians should work heartily as if they were working for the Lord and not men. Colossians 3 and verse 23. Colossians 3, 23. This is a verse that every one of us, if we don't have it memorized, we should at least know the concept of it well and remind ourselves of this, because we'll be a lot better employees, or a lot better anything. Whatever we do will be a lot better if we remembered this. Colossians 3:23, and whatsoever ye do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. Sometimes the work that we do on this earth, we think, what's the point? It just seems like it's drudgery. What is the point? The point is you're working for the Lord no matter what you do. Whatever your job is, it has value and it has meaning because you're doing it for the Lord, and you will receive a reward from the Lord because you're serving the Lord Christ. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily. Heartily is with full or unrestrained exercise of real feeling, with genuine sincerity, earnest, with genuine sincerity, earnestly, sincerely, really, with goodwill, cordially. It's also with courage, zeal, or spirit, spirited, zealously. So there's two different aspects to heartily. There is the sincerity aspect, and then there's the zealous aspect. And if you put those two things together, and if you work zealously and sincerely for the Lord in whatever you do, you're going to be a really good employee, or you're going to be a really good self-employed person. You're going to be a really good student or son or daughter or father or mother or wife or husband or whatever. You're going to be a pastor. You're going to be a really good whatever you do if you do it as if you're doing it to the Lord. So just remember that. When you're doing your work, no matter what it is, just imagine if Jesus was standing behind you, watching you, and telling you, hey, go over there and dig that ditch. Go over there and break up that concrete, you know, and pour some new ones or whatever, you know. Study that Bible. Get that outline put together. Whatever your job is, cook dinner, right? Clean the house. Do the laundry. Whatever your job is. Just imagine Jesus is there telling you to do it and watching. And we would all be a lot better workers. So Christians should work zealously and sincerely as if they were doing it directly for God. And those who do so those who work diligently will go places in life. Proverbs 22 and verse 29. Proverbs 22:29. Seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean men. Mean meaning base or average. Just, you know, just your nobody that's of any importance or significance. You're not going to stand before men like that if you're diligent in your business. You're going to stand before kings. Think about Joseph. Joseph, classic example. Diligent in his business. He went to Potiphar's house as a servant, and he was so diligent, Potiphar put him in charge of everything. Potiphar didn't even know what was going on in his house because Joseph took care of everything. And then Joseph got put in prison, and guess what? Joseph was diligent in the prison, and he was running the prison. And then he gets out of the prison, and he goes to the Pharaoh's house, and then he runs the entire nation, a world empire, Joseph ran. Why? Because he was diligent in his business, and he stood before kings, not before mean men. Diligent, when we're speaking of persons, means constant in application, persevering in endeavor, assiduous, industrious, not idle, not negligent, not lazy. So somebody that's diligent is the opposite of lazy. They're hardworking. They're not standing around. When you have a diligent employee, if he doesn't have anything to do, he's not just going to sit there on his phone and goof around. He's going to come and say, hey, what do you need me to do? What can I do next? Right? That's a diligent employee. The lazy employee is going to sneak off and go to the Port-a-John or something or somewhere where he can goof off and hopefully he doesn't get caught or found out, right? That's the difference. So he says, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? So a sluggard, and I know I've defined this before, I'm pretty sure, but just to refresh your memory, a sluggard is one who is naturally or habitually slow, lazy, or idle, one who is disinclined for work or exertion of any kind, a slothful or indolent person. When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? So we see here sluggards are lazy and they love to sleep. And the thing is about being lazy, if you're lazy, it will make you tired and it'll make you want to sleep. You ever experienced that? Right? You're just kind of sitting around, you're just not doing anything, you're just not in a good mood, you just don't feel like doing anything. And before you know it, you get really tired and you're just yawning. You're like, oh, I'm just really tired. I don't know. I don't know why I'm tired. I didn't do anything all day. That's why you're tired. You didn't do anything all day. That's why you're tired. Proverbs 19 and verse 15. And we all know, I mean, we've all been there. Every single one of us knows what that feels like. It says, slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. I know for me, sitting around for hours makes me tired. I pretty much can't take a full day off. I can take part of a day off, but if I take a whole day off and just did nothing, I'd just be going crazy. I just can't. I just feel like I got to go do something. I got to run back to my office and work on something or do something. I just don't like just sitting around all day long. A sluggard, because he is lazy, he'll just keep turning over in his bed instead of getting up. Proverbs 26 and verse 14. It says, as the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. You know, the door turning upon its hinges is ring, 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 ring. Just door open and close and open and close, and there's a slothful rolling from one side to the other, on his left shoulder, on his right shoulder, on his stomach, on his back. Just keeps rolling around, doesn't want to get up. The longer he sleeps, the more tired he will be when he finally gets up, and the more worthless he'll feel. You ever do that? You ever sleep way too long? You just didn't feel like getting up? You sleep too long, you get up, and you're just tired. Like, why am I tired? I just slept for 10 hours. That's because you slept for 10 hours. That's why. You slept too long. This, in turn, will make him sit around and be lazy, which will make him more tired and wanting to go to sleep again. And it is a vicious cycle. And this is something, a cycle that needs to be broken. And people that are depressed end up getting in this cycle, right? They're depressed, and they lay in bed, and they don't want to get up. And they roll from one side to the other, and they keep hitting the snooze button, and then finally just turn the alarm off, and they just keep sleeping. And they finally decide to get up, and then they're groggy, and they're tired. And then they sit around, and then they feel bad because they know they just slept way too long, and I feel too tired to do anything. And now I'm just like, you know, I'm just so tired, I want to go back to bed. And then it just repeats the old process over and over again. Now, sleep is a good thing. There's nothing like lying down to sleep after a good hard day's work. You do especially good, either manual labor or really a good day's work of mental labor, either one. When you do a good hard day's work and you are tired, there's nothing like laying your head down and sleeping whenever you've done that. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 12 says, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. So you labor, you lay your head down, and you are out like a light. That feels wonderful. Whether you eat little or much, even if you're not making a fortune, you work hard, you feel good at night. You lay down and you sleep. Now, the rich guy, though, he can't sleep because he's got too much stuff to worry about. He's worrying about this investment and this property and that property and this company and that. He can't sleep. So, you know, sometimes it's just better to have the middle station of life and not have too much wealth and too much responsibility so that you lose your peace. I would say, and I have no evidence for this whatsoever, I'm just guessing, that there is a lot of sleeping disorders in this country. You know, I don't know if you know that, but there's a lot of people that have sleeping disorders. And I will bet that a lot of it is due to a lot of people aren't working today, right? A lot of people are laid off, or a lot of people are on disability or whatever. And I'll bet you that has a lot to do with the sleeping disorders, because they're not doing a full day's labor and really working hard, and then, you know, it's hard to sleep whenever you didn't really do anything. So it wouldn't surprise me. Like I said, I'm just speculating. I don't know that.
Working from home during the pandemic.
Right. Yep.
A friend of mine's wife has been offered the opportunity to stay working from home for her company. It's a huge company down in the city that she works for, and they put pretty much everybody, hundreds of employees, home during the pandemic. Her boss called her and said that her and two others were the only three out of the whole company whose workload went up when they were working from home.
Is that right?
She's a hard worker, but out of hundreds of employees, three, their production went up. And so she and those other two, I guess, were being presented the opportunity to continue to work from home if they would like to. But everybody else was getting called back.
That's interesting, because I've heard other companies that have found that actually their production went up whenever they had people working from home.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm sure it would depend.
Yeah. But Mona says that. She said, you don't have people stopping by your desk, interrupting you. You're on this task, and they can't, well, what should I do about this?
Yep.
Or chattering. Bruce says that, too. So I don't quite... Mm-hmm. I thought it would be more like that, where people just aren't going to be that diligent. For one thing, I think the mindset, you go to work, you're not hanging out in your sweats because they really only see you from here up. You're not
right.
Just being slouchy. You have to look like something to go to work.
You have to present yourself.
But they,
My guess would be good employees are more productive at home and bad employees are less productive at home. I would guess that.
Nobody watching over you.
And people that are self-motivated and they'll work hard regardless, they'll do better at home because there are less distractions. And that would be my guess.
Makes sense.
And maybe there are some companies that are just, they or some teams and companies that just have a bunch of really good, diligent, hardworking guys, and at home they do great, and maybe the other places have a different atmosphere or different people. And that's the only way I can make sense of it anyway. But.
And there's some people that just need someone watching them all the time but don't do squat.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So I can go out, like I had this guy I got rid of at work. And I took, while I left, I knew where he was at his job. I knew where he should be at when I got back from 2 days of vacation. It looked like he worked about 3 hours.
Yeah. Yep.
So with him and I had a talk.
Yeah. Yep. There's always going to be people like that. So sleep is necessary for the body to rejuvenate and heal itself. So it is a good thing. I mean, when Solomon's condemning the sluggard for sleeping, it's not because he's sleeping. It's because he's sleeping too much. John 11 and verse 12. The disciples said whenever Jesus told them that Lazarus was sleeping, they thought he was naturally sleeping. Jesus was speaking about death. But it says there in verse 12, John 11, 12, then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. So they recognized that sleep was helpful to the body. And I think that's probably the best thing you can do. If you get sick, just sleep. Get plenty of sleep. And if you want to prevent yourself from getting sick, in my experience, get enough sleep. I can almost guarantee you every time I get sick, it's because I was not getting enough sleep. I've been up late several nights in a row or something and I was weak. When I get good sleep, I normally don't get sick. So yeah, sleep's very important. And it's foolish to deprive oneself of necessary sleep. Psalm 127 and verse 2. This is not wise. There are a lot of people that do this. A lot of people in this country. Like I said, we have a major split. We have a bunch of lazy people in this country, but then we got a bunch of people that work way too much and overwork themselves and don't get enough sleep. And both positions are equally wrong. Psalm 127 in verse 2. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. So it is vain, worthless endeavor to get up early and sit up late. It's fine to get up early if you don't sit up late. And I guess it's okay to sit up late as long as you don't get up early if you're getting enough sleep. But to burn it on both ends of the candle, to stay up late and get up early, is very foolish. God gives sleep as a blessing to his children, to his beloved. I'm a big firm believer in sleep, and I'm a firm believer in, and I'm going to talk about that. I need 7.5, and everybody's different. I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But I'm a firm believer in sleep, and I'm a firm believer in scheduled sleep, especially for children. It is crucial for children, the younger they are, but children in scheduled sleep, get to sleep the same time every night, get up at the same time every morning. They've written whole books about this. Very, very important. And for me, if I get to bed at the same time and get up at the same time every day, I do a lot better. And I would think that most people do. So diligent men sleep to live. Sluggards live to sleep. Right? A lot of truth to that, I think. Now, everyone needs a different amount of sleep. Most people need between 6 and 9 hours of sleep per night to be healthy and feel well-rested. That most people fall in there. There is the occasional weirdo that only needs 4 hours of sleep, and I envy him forever, because if I only needed 4 hours of sleep, I couldn't tell you the amount of stuff I could get done. I'd have an extra 3.5 hours every single day. I could get all kinds of stuff done, and that would be awesome. But anyway, but most people need 6 to 9 hours. I need 7.5, and I've just figured this out with trial and error, basically, over the years. If I get less than 7.5, I feel tired. And I can pretty well tell. I get up and I just have that tired feeling. Not the sleepy feeling. Like, I feel tired every morning when I get up, but I have that worn out feeling. You know, when you get up, you got that feeling. I gotta have 7.5 hours. 7 to 7.5 anyway. So here's the thing. Don't condemn a person who needs 8 hours of sleep per night if you only need 6. Because people's bodies are different. So if you need 6 and some guy gets 8 and you're like, you are so lazy, sleeping 8 hours, I can't believe it, I slept 8 hours, I wouldn't know what to, you know, do with myself. Don't do that, because, or even 9 hours, because there are people that actually need that amount of sleep. I should have looked it up before I got here, but I think I remember reading that Einstein needed a ton of sleep, like 9 hours or something like that. I could be remembering that wrong. But I've heard of very productive, highly intelligent people that need a ton of sleep. And so, you know, we usually think about productive people that they never sleep. Not smart, productive people. They get enough. Now, there's a big difference between the person who only needs 7 hours of sleep, but is too lazy to get up and sleeps for 8 or 9, and the person who needs 8 or 9 hours to feel well rested and not be tired and dragging all day. So there's a big difference, right? There's a big difference between the guy that needs 7 and sleeps for 8 or 9, right? Just because he's lazy and he just doesn't want to get up. And the guy that needs 8 or 9, right? Big difference between the two. Now, I'm just going to leave you with this. This is interesting. Imagine how much more a lazy person could get done in a lifetime if he didn't sleep an extra hour every day and instead used that hour productively. I'm talking about an extra hour that you don't need, right? So for me, 7.5, if I slept 8.5 hours every night just because I'm lazy and the alarm goes off and I just don't feel like getting up and I hit the snooze, and then turn it off and I get up 8.5 hours every day, I'll show you how much production I would lose. If a man did so, if he slept that extra hour, between the ages of 15 and 75, so pretty much your working years, I mean, you know, 75, you're getting pretty old, but anyway, when you could be doing something productive, right, from 15 to 75, roughly, most people lived about 75. If you did that for those years, you would have 21,900 extra hours of productive time during your life. That's an extra 2,737 hours and a half of 8-hour workdays. So an extra 2,700 workdays you could have by not sleeping that extra hour that you don't need. That's an extra 10.5 years of extra 8-hour workdays. So is it any wonder that although we all have the same amount of hours in a day, some people accomplish far more in their lives than others? You sleep one extra hour and you have 10.5 years less of productive work that you could do versus the person that didn't. Think about that. Now, that's not even to mention the time that we all spend goofing off and messing around when we could have been doing something productive during our waking hours. Imagine how many decades more productive work you could get done and more accomplished if you didn't sleep too much and if you didn't goof around and waste your time. Decades. And you wonder, you look at people, how do they get this all done? How did that guy write 2 dozen books in his lifetime? You know how hard it is to write a book? I mean, a real book? Like, I don't even write real books. These commentaries on Proverbs, that's not a real book. I mean, that's just writing my thoughts on each verse, right? I mean, it takes time and it's hard, but that's not a real book. I'm talking about a real book where you have to research a topic and know a ton of stuff about a topic, and you've got, you know, 200 citations in the back of the book from hundreds of other books that you've read and learned enough to be able to present this topic. You know how much time that takes? That's an incredible amount of time. And there are people that crank out tons of books in a lifetime. You know how they do it? It's not by sleeping all day. It's not by goofing around and wasting their time. It's about working hard and making the most of the time that they have. So think about that. Every time you use that extra hour of sleep, 10.5 years you could have accomplished more stuff by the end of your life. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? Get up and get something done. That's what I got to say.